Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
It's already the last day. What happened? Where did the time go? Actually, as you were reading through that this morning, Micah, it's interesting to me that I was thinking about how sad it is to get to a point in life where God can say, here's what he's going to do. Here's what's going to have to happen to your family. And Eli just, at this point in his life, just says, well, let God do what he wants. That really is sad, because when other people hear the news about what God intends to do, they have such a relationship with God, they realize that, well, if we change, if we set our hearts to seek God right now, he will alter the pathway. But Eli doesn't seem to feel that way. It seems like it's hopeless for him and his sons at this time. And it's one of those things, you hope you never get to a point in life like that, where you can just like walk away and figure, well, God will do what he wants, without having any impact in our lives. That's an interesting point for today to discuss at some point. But anyway, so where we are, day five, we're going to look at Samuel as he's operating as a priest, and then Samuel's last days, his birth and his the whole upbringing. So you're back in this period again where now we're looking at Samuel right in here. Whoops, he's up to this point. And you're probably at the point right now where you're right about in here where the ark is going to get captured when they go out to battle in this case, and Eli is going to die at this point. And at that point, then Samuel takes over as judge at this point, and really as priest and operating in the temple there. It seems like he does that as well. And you're going to be mainly in this period, like right in here. So you're sort of like at the beginning of Samson, if you backtrack in time. This, you can picture all those things we talked about at the beginning of the week. Time-wise, we're sort of overlapping that period there. If you're wondering what happens when you get to that point in maybe the second class, when you get to where the ark actually does get captured, because the ark is going to leave Shiloh now up in here where it would have been where Samuel was at this point, and it's going to be taken into the battle. They lose the battle with the Philistines, and the ark comes down and goes through Ashdod and Gath and Ekron, which are three of the other major of the five Philistine cities. So by the time God's done at this point, it's interesting that between Samson and the ark, really all five of the Philistine cities, the major cities, were hit by God. And then the ark's going to come back over here to Beth Shemesh. When it comes back on the cart, that's where the people of Beth Shemesh, they looked into the ark, remember, and then God struck about 70 of them, and they got spooked out. This was an Israelitish town right here. So then they send the ark back up to Kiriath Jearim right in here, and it stays at the house of Abinadab. I think it's actually there. James and I were looking at it. It's almost like 90 years, wasn't it? 90-some years in the end that the ark's actually there. And we all get fooled by that passage that says that the ark had been 20 years in the house of Kiriath Jearim in 1 Samuel 7. But really, that's just the first 20 years. And then after that, it's there for about another 70 years. And why? One of those interesting questions that you don't want to get sidetracked on, but it's always fascinating to me. Why Samuel's sitting up in here, and the ark is down in here, and nobody bothers to get the ark. And here you are. You think, like, if you were operating as high priest, when the Day of Atonement came along, you were supposed to go into the most holy place and mimic the fact that Jesus Christ, our great high priest, will be able to take us into the most holy place and be in fellowship with God. There was no ark. There was nothing there. And what happened to the Day of Atonement all this time? Did they even bother doing it is an interesting question. So that's where you're at. This chart you can probably find online somewhere. It's actually out there. I've used it before in the sense that it shows you the journeys of the ark that took place really over about a seven-month time period right there. And then they point out in here that the ark's probably at Kiriath Jearim for about, that's what they came up with, about 92 years. I think that's about how long it stays there. It's also interesting to look at the fact that the tabernacle right now is up here in Shiloh, but then when you get to the point later on in the readings where Saul is killed, I guess we just did that earlier this week, so when Saul is killed at the end of 1 Samuel, the Philistines, when they came up through the central part of the land, they seemed to come south at this point through Shiloh, and they killed Saul and Jonathan, and then they came through Shiloh, and it appears that the Jews packed up the tabernacle and went south. And they may have taken it down to Nob for a while, and it was further south down in here, because that's where it was later on when Saul killed all those priests. That was down in Nob. And then it seems like after that, they took it up here to Gibeon, and it's funny that the tabernacle ended up where the Gibeonites had been, and it sat there, and it never left Gibeon, as far as we know. It just gets left there, because David never goes to get the tabernacle. Instead, he organizes the building of a temple in Jerusalem, and then the ark gets brought back to Jerusalem. So if you've never put all that together before, it's an interesting study about the journeys of the Ark and the Tabernacle. Samuel's circuit that you're going to look at this morning, when Samuel goes around, he goes from his hometown here in Ramah, and it seems like he would go to Gilgal and over to Bethel and then to Mizpah. And Samuel just seems to have just picked a central area right in there that he spent most of his time. And he tried to get people to come to him, I think, is his strategy, instead of going all throughout the land. But everybody's limited to how much impact they can have. But Samuel now is going to get into this whole period of not just judges now, but we're going to have prophets and the school of the prophets. And Samuel is going to unite the land, really. He's going to unite the whole area, in a sense, spiritually. And it's funny to watch in terms of offshoots of all that, because during the period of the judges, the tribes were so scattered in the different judges, and there was so much rivalry between the tribes, they never really wanted to unite the kingdom. And then, to Samuel's despair, when he finally does unite the people and they all come together sort of like under one rulership, what did the people want to have? A king. And Samuel's like all depressed over the fact that they want a king like all the other nations. But it seems like that's an offshoot of the fact that he had finally united the kingdom. During the period of the judges, they would have never wanted a king, other than that one point where Abimelech there reigns as king of one city or something. But now that he unites the group, they actually ask for a king. So some of the things you can look for today is, as the reading that we just did, God's judgment on the house of Eli. God does have a limit. The mercies of God are great. And the angels are the same way. But there is a point at which we can exhaust God's ability to work with us. And he basically says at some point that if we aren't going to respond, if we're not going to go and turn our life around and at least aim in the right direction, that his mercies run out. And he has to, at that point, bring about judgments on the community so that he can save the remnant. Otherwise, he may lose them all. And that's, you can see that happening in the time of Eli and Eli's sons. The whole leadership was going down the tubes. God's calling of Samuel, Eli's acceptance of it, which is amazing, where he just sort of like passively accepts what God's going to do, and then his failures. Eli, even though he knew what was coming, he never made any attempt that we see in the Bible, at least, at changing that pathway. He just accepts the fact, that's the way my sons are, and that's what I've done, and it's all sort of hopeless and over. It's a really depressing attitude to have. The role of the faithful priests, I think that's worth always looking at, what the priests were supposed to do in the community and how God had scattered Levites all throughout the land so that they could hopefully teach the people. The ark does get captured. Eli's sons are going to die, and Eli's going to die too, and that's a major point in Israel's history there. But even though, for these people at least, as much as they thought that they had to take the ark into battle and that the ark was going to give them success, here the ark gets captured, goes over to the Philistines for 7 months, and even though there's no Israelite around it at all, God takes care of his ark. And I think there's a huge lesson that comes out of that about the ability of the angels to take care of things. They really don't need us to take care of their stuff. The only part that we get involved in is when they're trying to train us and develop us for God's family. Everybody's mishandling of the ark, that's always an interesting thing to look at, maybe in the second class, and their lack of respect for God. They should have known better. If they were reading their Bibles, they would have known those men of Beth Shemesh would have never looked into the ark. In fact, how often did the average Jew get to see the ark the way it was supposed to run in the tabernacle? When did you get to see the ark? Never. And some of you may be surprised at that, but you never got to see the ark at all. Who got to see it? One person in the nation gets to see it in how many days? 1 day a year. You talk about God's mechanisms for developing faith, that you have to have a belief system where you believe in the unseen. That's what he was trying to do. He didn't want to just put it out there for everybody to see all the time. He wanted people to be thinking about, there's something there we ought to be aiming for. The high priest gets to go in there once a year and actually gets to see it and be right there with the Shekinah glory over with the cherubim. God's invited us to go in there. The high priest goes in once a year, and in a sense, he can take all of us in there with him. That's the mechanism that he was trying to illustrate through the law. And Jesus Christ, of course, finally has done that for us. But that's how God develops faith in people. So Samuel does turn the people to God, and it's an amazing turnaround of the people. And you wonder, well, how did he do that? How did Samuel have such an impact on the nation if it wasn't springboarding off of what had happened with Samson? And all of a sudden, the message went around the whole community of what Samson had done in giving his life and killing those Philistines. And people's hearts were finally starting to be touched. And then you can also, there in your book, there's a good section there on the steps to spiritual restoration, which the community is going through at this point. Samuel's consistent character, I think that's a good one to look at, whereas we saw how Samson goes through these highs and lows. Samuel just seems to be the kind of guy who's just on a spiritual high all the time, even though it was a frustrating time in the community. Israel asking for a king, Samuel's final warning, if we get there at the in the second class, and his appeal to Israel. And also you'll get a good chance to look at Samuel as a type of Christ, because he certainly is a good one. And really, between the two of them, it was an interesting concept that you almost have like Samson as being like the John the Baptist, and Samuel comes along as the Christ. One of them is the forerunner of the other one and prepares the people to be ready for the work of the other one. It's an interesting concept of how the two of them match up between Samson and Samuel and John Baptist and Jesus. So hopefully that will be a lot of good discussion today. You have a lot to cover, so let's get started.